God, Paramahansa Brihadaraja, Acharya, Astotar, Satasisuman, His Divine Grace, Abhaya Charana, Govinda Bhaktivedanta, Goswami, Srila Prabhupada, Ki, Jayam Vishnupada, Paramahansa Brihadaraja, Acharya, Astotar, Satasisuman, His Divine Grace, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, Sarasvati, Goswami, Srila Prabhupada, Ki, Ananta Kuti, Vaishnavani, Ki, Nama Acharya, Srila Haridas Thakur, Ki, Prem Shikaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Pavanityananda Shadwaita Gadadhara Srivasari Gaura Bhakti Vindaki Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopagina Shamakunda Radha Kunda Gita Govardhana Ki Shri Vrindavandana Ki Shri Navadriptana Ki Shri Gangamayi Jamamayi Ki Shri Mati Tulsi Maharani Ki Samaveta Bhakti Vindaki Nantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. All glories to you, Srila Prabhupada. Namo Krishna Padaya, Krishna Prasaya Vidura. Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Tinamana Namaste Saraswati Devi Guru Ramaka Chayana Vishnu Shishini Navidas Chachada Siddhi. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, let's see if I can find a little reading. There is no marker here. What's the chapter number? Chapter? 52? You think? Huh? I know the verses, I just don't know the chapter. 52? Okay. Here we go. All right, we're reading verses 5 through 11. In this 52nd chapter of the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The title of the chapter is Rukmini's Message to Krishna. I think we'll read, I'll read through the verses until we get to verse 11, and then we'll read verse 11 together. So text 5. Bhagavan Guna Avrad Ja purim yavana veshtitam hatvam lecha balam ninye tadiyam dvarakam danam. The Lord returned to Mathura, which was still surrounded by yavanas. Then he destroyed the army of the barbarians and began taking their valuables to Dwarka. Purport, very short. It is clear from this verse that Kalayavana alone pursued Lord Krishna into the mountain cave. When Krishna returned to the besieged city of Mathura, he eliminated the vast barbarian army. Text 6. Niyamane dane gobhir nribhischa chuta dhoditai ajagama jarasandas thrayo vinshatya kinkapa. As the wealth was being carried by oxen and men under Lord Krishna's direction, Jarasandha appeared at the head of the 23 army. Vilokya vegarabhasam ripusyanyasya madhavau manasya chetasthanau rajan dhudhruvaturdritam. O king, seeing the fierce waves of the enemy's army, the two Madhavas, imitating human behavior, ran swiftly away. Vihaya vitam prachuram aditau bhirubhitavat padbhyam padabalasya pnyam padbhyam padma palasapyam chelatur bahuyojanam. Abandoning the abundant riches, fearless but feigning fear, they went away, many yojanas, on their lotus-like feet. Text 9. Palayamanatau dristva maghadha prahasanbali avadhavadratan kar ishayo apramanavit. When he saw them fleeing, powerful Jarasandha laughed loudly and then pursued them with charioteers and foot soldiers. He could not understand the exalted position of the two lords. Text 10. Pradrutya druram samshrantau tungam aruhatam girim pravarshanakyam bhagavan nityada yatra varshati. Apparently exhausted after fleeing a long distance, the two lords climbed a high mountain named Parvarshana, upon which Lord Indra showers incessant rain. And text 11, we'll do it together. Girao nilingav ajnaya nidhi ghamya padang nipa. Sorry. Dadha girim edhobhi samantad agnim utsrijan girao nilinav ajnaya nadhi gamya padang nipa. Dadha girim edhobhi samantad agnim utsrijan girao nilin av ajnaya nadhi ghamya padang nipa. Dadhaha girim edhobhi samantad agnim utsrijan. Vaishnavas? Giraninam avyaya nadhi gamya padam nirpa vidaha girame dhobhi samantar agnimusrijan. Girao nilinav abhyaya agnigyam nipa tadaha girim edhobhi samantat agnyanu sujan. Girao nilinav abhyaya arigamya padam nipa tadaha girim edhobhi. Vaishnavis? Girao nilinav agyaya narigamya padam nipa taham girim edhobhi samantad agnim utsrijan. Okay. Girao, on the mountain, nilinao, hiding, agnaya, being aware, na adhigamya, not finding, padam, their location, nipa, O King Parikshit. Dadaha, he set ablaze Gidim, the mountain. Edhobhi, with firewood. Samantat, on all sides. Agnim, fire. Utsrajan, generating. Translation. Although he knew they were hiding on the mountain, Jarasandha could find no trace of them. Therefore, O king, he placed firewood on all sides and set the mountain ablaze. Purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Clearly, we are observing one of the Supreme Lord's transcendental pastimes. Although the Bhagavatam states that the two lords, Krishna and Balaram, were exhausted, end quotes, even in their so-called exhausted state, they were able to quickly climb a high mountain and shortly thereafter jump off it to the ground. It would be unwise and illogical to ignore the whole picture the sages are giving us here and instead try to pick apart isolated descriptions. Clearly, we are watching the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the midst of His spiritual pastimes. We are not observing an ordinary human being. Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram were still quite young when this pastime took place, and one can easily see in these descriptions how they must have been enjoying themselves, eagerly fleeing from the somewhat ridiculous King Jarasandha, racing up a mountain, jumping off, and totally befuddling the constantly failing demon, who somehow or other never lost confidence in himself. Seen without envy or quarrelsomeness, the Lord's pastimes are immensely entertaining. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Vitavaya Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Vichamani Nirvishesha Shrimadhi Prastaya Vasatami Om Abhinath Midam Prasyaya Namadana Shrakaya Chakshur Inyotam Dini Tazma Shri Vidavaya Namaha Mukham Kadati Vacha Alam Kaman Namaya Tevdin Yukti Patam Maham Dandai Shri Guru Dhanakamana So this chapter, these leelas that are going on here, but specifically in this chapter, proposes a very interesting dichotomy in the description of Jarasandha and Rukmini, strangely enough. So we have Jarasandha, who is wealthy and quite mature, responsible, leader, ruler, has a whole kingdom under his jurisdiction. He sees Krishna multiple times. He comes in front of Krishna face to face multiple times. And we have Rukmini, who's a little girl. She's just a young woman, really, maybe probably in her teens, maybe her early teens. And she never goes anywhere. She's never been out of her palace. Certainly hasn't seen Krishna at all. Hasn't seen him face to face. And has no one under her care. She's under the care of her father and her many brothers. And yet we have this interesting fact that Jarasandha, although he had all those qualifications and he saw Krishna, he didn't see Krishna. Right? He misunderstood Krishna to be an ordinary person at best. And he had an enmity towards Krishna, and as is mentioned in this purport, totally befuddling the constantly failing demon who somehow or other never lost confidence in himself. Somehow I can hear Vidyananda Maharaj in this purport very clearly. That's Jarasandha. And then you have Rukmini, who's this little girl, never goes anywhere, never been outside of her palace, completely protected by her relatives. And just by hearing from people who pass through the palace on a regular basis, she was actually able to see Krishna, even though she never saw Krishna. So that's very interesting, that you have one person who saw Krishna multiple times, had many material qualifications, and had no vision whatsoever, was unable to communicate or to get that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even made such foolish attempt is to set a whole mountain on fire, for God's sakes, because he thought that Krishna was hiding somewhere on that mountain. And then you have Rukmini, who managed to become the wife of Krishna by writing him a letter and sending it with a Brahmin to him, and actually had evoked by her deep affection and her focus on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, she had already evoked within Krishna a desire to meet her, a desire to see her and to ultimately become her husband. So I found this apparent imbalance very, very interesting. And looking at it through us, or as it applies to us, I think it has great relevance. I found great relevance. Because we have an option, actually, to be of the Jarasandha nature or to be of the Rukmini nature. And really, those are the only two options we have. We can either be divine or demoniac. There's not much in the middle. We can either be under the control of the material nature, or we can be under the control of the Daiva Prakriti, the Supreme Lord's nature. They're both his nature, but his superior nature or his inferior nature. His bewildering nature in terms of keeping us in the material world, or his bewildering nature in terms of bringing us closer to him in a loving relationship. Both Mayas, Yoga Maya and Maha Maya, are agents of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and do his bidding. And our position in juxtaposed to those Mayas is our desire. That's our freedom. That's our independence. That's the button that we push that tells Krishna which operating system we want to use. Whether we want to be operated on or directed by the material energy, or whether we want to be directed by the superior energy. And based on our desire, we give Krishna indication of how he should manage our affairs. And Krishna takes that lead. And with the help of the material energy, or the Prakriti, which is also Krishna's divine energy, he gives us exactly what we want according to our adhikars, according to our qualification. So here we can see that these two people, they had very different desires. Jarasandha's desire was a desire for power, it was a desire for wealth, it was a desire for superiority, it was a desire to conquer the Supreme, or to conquer Krishna, not really understanding Krishna's superior potency. It was born of arrogance, it was born of all the characteristics that are described in the Bhagavad Gita as demoniac. All this is mine, tomorrow I'll have more, he's my enemy, I'll kill him, and I'll try to kill him 23 times, and I'll keep going back again and again to kill him, and anybody gets in my way, I'll take care of him. And then on the other hand, you have the divine energy, or the divine person who wants to come to know Krishna and to render service to him and to make him happy by that service. So where do we fall in? Who are we? And how do we let Krishna know what our real desire is? And how do we alter our desire? Is it possible to alter our desire? Is it possible to hone our desire so it becomes more in line with the divine rather than demoniac? We live in a situation which fosters demoniac vision. Pretty much every message we see in the material world around us is offering us opportunities to take on a demoniac mentality. We're inspired, right? We're inspired to get gadgets, to be competitive, to be lusty, to want more and more, to defeat our enemy by unfair means, to be hypocritical, to all the qualities that are defined in the demoniac category are the very qualities that are being presented as desirable in this material sphere. I sometimes do PowerPoints. I use a lot of PowerPoint presentations my Bhagavad Gita classes. And so I'm often trying to find images to bring home the points I want to make. And if you look up words that are valuable to the divine, like humility and austerity, you will find images which indicate clearly that those qualities are in no way desirable. Maybe you'll find some little Christian corner of the world where those qualities are brought forward as being desirable. But in the general mass of people, those desires, those qualities are considered unwanted. You see images like people stepping on people's heads for humility. And, you know, and images, there's images of people carrying signs that say no to austerity. So you've got this this hostile environment which is training people to become contrary to divine qualities. And then on the other hand, we have the mandate, the desire, the inspiration from our contact with Srila Prabhupada and Srila Prabhupada's books to cultivate within ourselves the divine qualities. And how to do it in this environment. It's not so easy. So our acharyas, Srila Prabhupada, they give us mainly, there's many things which assist us in cultivating a proper mentality despite the fact that we're in a hostile environment. But mainly there are three things. Mainly there are three things which facilitate us in overcoming the outside influence and cultivating within ourselves the divine qualities, which are essential. The divine qualities are essential in seeing spirit. Yeah, there was a discussion the other day, and there was a question, can we see spirit? And the answer was given that spirit can't be seen. But I beg to differ, because spirit can be seen. We hear Premanjana Charita Bhakti Vilochane Na Santaksa Dhaiva Vidayesha Vilokayanti, that when our eyes are anointed with the salve of love of God, then we can see spirit. When we have a connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead through loving service, then by His mercy, we can see spirit. Not only can we see spirit, we can talk to spirit, and spirit can respond to us. We can serve spirit in a loving relationship. And there are many instances where the exchanges between the living entity in the material sphere and the Supreme Lord in the spiritual sphere actually interact with each other, where you have God eating and you have God acting as a witness and walking miles and for his devotee, and so many different exchanges take place. And Prabhupada actually said to us that we, Krishna can talk to you. And he even said that we should go to Krishna and we should explain to him what our problems are. He said at the installation of Krishna Balaram in Vrindavan that we should go before Krishna Balaram and explain to them what's wrong. Tell them our problems. And by explaining to them our difficulties, they will assist us. They'll help us. So this relationship between us, the tiny jiva soul, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead is possible, even in this material world, to be extremely rich and extremely involving for the living entity. It's not like we have to wait till we're dead and out of this body and go somewhere else to come in contact with Krishna. And we see with Rukmini here that, of course, you know, on one level we see these transcendental personalities who are way beyond our position. They're appearing in the Bhagavatam. And they, you know, Rukmini is the goddess of fortune herself. And I'm sure if we look in the Gargasamhita, we could find some place where Jarasandha had some transcendental something or other and ultimately wasn't really a demon in the first place, but, you know, whatever. But the lessons on the ground, the lessons in the pages of the Bhagavatam are there for us to learn and to see what is possible. And Srila Prabhupada in Bhagavad Gita, he says, devotional service and the kingdom of God are non-different. And the kingdom of God implies that Krishna is involved. There's no kingdom of God without God. So our existence in relation to the Supreme Personality of Godhead requires certain qualification. If we have those qualifications, then communicating, even intimately interacting with spirit, becomes very much possible, something that we should do, that we feel impelled to do, and that Krishna also wants to do. And because he wants to do it, he makes it happen. Because he wants us to communicate with him. He wants us to offer him loving service. He wants us to have a relationship with him. And when he sees that our desire is in concert with that, then he starts to arrange things for that to happen. We just have to show him that's our desire. He has to be compelled by our desire. So Rukmini, she compelled that desire in Krishna by her sincerity of purpose. And Jarasandha fell into the Avajananti Mamudha category because of his desire. So we need to work on our desire. We need to keep our desire pure, because our desire is the channel by which we connect with Krishna or don't connect with Krishna. That's it. Now, if I ask how many people want to go back to Godhead, everyone's hand goes up, and how many people want to be Krishna conscious, everybody's hand goes up. And it's very nice that we're all, you know, we're all here and practicing Krishna consciousness. But then there's some other desires that are bubbling, maybe under the surface or somehow not prevalent most of the time, or at least not obvious most of the time, that are not according to the qualifications that Krishna wants us to have in order to see him. And how to get those desires in line, how to take the desire for sense gratification, the desires inspired by the three modes, especially the lower modes of material nature, and alter those desires so that they become redirected towards the desire to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's our job. That's what we're here in the material world to do. And to the degree that we are successful in achieving that reorientation of our desire, we will be able to communicate with spirit, and we'll be able to see the spiritual world everywhere we go. When Prabhupada was in New York, someone spoke to him, some old lady, and said, "You must really miss Vrindavan. You must really miss Vrindavan." And Prabhupada's response was, "Everywhere I go is Vrindavan." So everywhere I am is Vrindavan, because my vision, my desire, is in sync with the will of the Supreme Lord, and therefore he is facilitating me to be in Vrindavan wherever I am. He opens up my eyes so that I can see through the eyes of Shastra, so that I can see the holy name when I chant it. I can actually have a relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so that I can see the devotees as individuals who are engaged in pure devotional service, or devotional service meant to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. These visions, the ability to perceive these things, is coming directly from Krishna's intervention in our lives based on our desire. So cultivating this desire is the primary objective of one engaged in or wanting to become Krishna conscious, cultivating that desire. So Rukmini, her desire to come in contact with the Supreme Personality of Godhead and to even to marry the Supreme Personality of Godhead was so strong that despite the fact that she was very young, very isolated, surrounded by, in a very protected situation, very, very cloistered, one might think. She had a lot of big brothers, and one of them wanted to marry her to Sisupal. Not a very nice guy, not a very devotional person. Still, her desire was so strong that with just a letter, she was able to bring Krishna. And Krishna had to go through some stuff to get there because he was a little far away and he had to be there immediately. But he made the arrangement to be there for her. And actually, he was already contemplating his relationship with her because of her pure, strong devotional desire. So how to cultivate that devotional desire? And I mentioned that there were three main ways. Maybe there's more. I'm going to speak about three quickly because we don't have much time. But the first way is by chanting the holy name. And it's described that the dim light, even just coming in contact with the dim light of the holy name, can erase the darkness. Just like we were on the beach the other day, some of the ladies went on a retreat. We went to a place on the beach. And so some of us were on the beach at the sunrise. And you watch the sun coming up over the horizon, over the Atlantic Ocean. It's quite a sight, because I was just contemplating on Samudra, how amazing the ocean is. And how that sun coming up, even as it begins, you can't even see the sun, you can't even see really any sign of the sun, but already it starts to get light. And you can already start to see shapes and forms. All of a sudden, you could see devotees here and there chanting japa, sitting on the beach and walking on the beach. Whereas 10 minutes before, you couldn't see them. But now as the sun, just barely, the rays are starting to dissipate the darkness, and we can see. So this, even Namabas gives us that dim light of the holy name, even if we chant it imperfectly, and the prayer says even disrespectfully, that the holy name can give us vision, and that vision can inspire us to have a pure desire. So if we can try to chant the holy name appropriately and attentively, then that can help to inspire our desire. So then the other things that we do to inspire our desire are, another very important one is association. And association definitely inspires our desire. We saw with Kamsa, he even had a glimmer every now and again that, you know, maybe I should let the babies go, and maybe I should let Vasudeva go. You know, he was so honest, he brought his baby. But because of his association, his desire was inspired in the wrong way, right? His ministers, his so-called ministers, they gave him bad information. And because he took that association, he was bewildered again and again. He couldn't get out of his bewilderment. His false ego was inflamed by envious persons who inspired his envy. And we certainly have those opportunities here. We have opportunities to take association from people who will inspire us to become very materialistic, and people who will inspire us to become very envious. And sometimes, in our ignorance, we invite those people into our home. We put them in a very central place in the middle of our living room, and we turn them on regularly for hours on end and sit in a totally receptive position and listen to their ranting and raving, right? It's called a television set or a computer, right? That we invite demoniac people with very ill intention, with no good qualities, and we invite them to come into our home. We make a home in Alachua because we want to be near the temple. And we want to be in a fairly mode of goodness situation. So unless we're preaching, we prefer the celestial countryside. And we try to keep our income, you know, our expenditures low, so we don't have to work so much like mudas. We can have some time for spiritual life. And then we take the living space of our home in our own place, and we plant this machine there, which will help us to bring the material energy directly into our living room and give it a place of prominence in our mind and our hearts. So if we choose that association, we will not develop love of Krishna. It's like pouring water on a fire. We chant our rounds praying for service, and then we watch television or the computer, either one, and we become bewildered by the material energy. We become desirous of things. Actually, research has been done to indicate that in Bangladesh, which came up on the happiness index as being one of the happiest places in the world, that if you want to make them unhappy, all you have to do is put a television in their midst. Because as soon as they start to see what's available across the street, you know, then the grass becomes greener on the other side of the street, and they're no longer happy. Now they're hankering and lamenting. I want it. I don't have it. I need it. I'm sad because I can't afford it. And we start contemplating, how can I get there? How can I get that? How can I get rich? How can I become an IT professional? So so these opportunities for devotional association are there totally within our community, within Prabhupada's family. We have so many opportunities for hearing, and actually even to some extent we can use that same instrument, the computer at least, so that we can have classes, we can share spiritual realizations, we can look at beautiful pictures, we can have retreats, we can have association with devotees, we can come to classes, we can hear attentively the Bhagavatam, the Srimad Bhagavad Gita. We can enlighten and enliven one another by hearing and talking, hearing about and speaking about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and kindle our desire to go back to the spiritual world. Because in the spiritual world, everybody has only the desire to serve the Supreme Lord. There's no other desire. Nothing. No other desire. They just want to make Krishna happy. So the more we hear about that, and the more we interact with people who are aspiring for the same thing, the more our desire becomes enlivened. And then the third thing, after the holy name and after association, is our choices. That we have to make choices. And every day of every minute of every day of every day of every year of every year of our life, we are making choices. And our choices, I was describing to one devotee yesterday or the day before, that sometimes there, you know, you have this mixer in there that adjusts the music that we listen to, and it has a million switches on it. You can slide them up and down. It makes the treble higher and the bass lower and whatever. I don't know how, anything about it, but it has all these switches, and by moving the switches around, you change the quality of the sound. So also it's described in the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam that there are three modes of material nature, and there's an infinite combination of those three modes. Goodness, passion, and ignorance infinitely unite and combine and mix within each living entity and inspire their desire. If your desire is inspired by the mode of passion, then passion will drive you, and you'll be driven to get money, you'll be driven to get fame, you'll be driven to be on top. And that will be the primary motivating force behind everything you do. And if you are inspired, your desire is inspired by the mode of ignorance, then you'll be inspired to a different thing. You'll be inspired to get a lot of sleep and to kind of make sure that everything gets done, but you don't have to do anything. And you'll be lazy, and you'll be complacent. So these are the inspirations that come from associating or making choices that put us in the mode of ignorance and passion. And then there's goodness. We can make choices. We can adjust those switches to bring us closer to the mode of goodness. And by the mode of goodness, we become inspired perhaps to pursue spiritual understanding, to gain knowledge, to control the urges of the senses, to bring our senses under control. Of course, within the three modes, there's downsides in all three modes. But just for the sake of advancing in spiritual life, it's far better to be associated with the mode of goodness than the modes of passion and ignorance, which pull us down. So passion and ignorance, if we adjust the knobs, we can adjust the knobs on our lives. We can make the decisions in our lives to bring passion into our life. Now we would think, well, who would do that? Why would you bring passion into your life? But we do it all the time. Because we eat food that's cooked and in the mode of passion. It's maybe we eat in the restaurant. I know many devotees who eat in Subway and Taco Bell and these places, Pizza Hut. Anyway, whatever. But then the preparation is at best in the mode of passion, at worst in the mode of ignorance. And it does something to our consciousness. It changes our way of thinking. It aspires our desire in the wrong way, right? What we see, what time of day we function. If we function early in the morning, before the sun rises, and just at the sunrise, it inspires us in the mode of goodness. If we go in the daytime and we're running around when everything is going and we have our phone in our pocket ringing, and we, you know, it tells us whether we have mail and all these things. That inspires the mode of passion. And if we go in the mode of in the late evening, we'll find people inspired by the mode of ignorance. They're into drinking, and they're lazy, and they're tired, and they're lethargic, and they're just sitting around stuffing their face, watching television, drinking unmentionable things, eating unmentionable things. These things inspire us in the mode of ignorance. So the time of day has an effect. What we do when we do it has an effect on what modes inspire our desire. And there's so many other things that do. The sangskaras, the things that we allow to make impressions on us. That's what sangskara means, that it makes an impression on you. And so we have good sangskaras. We have sangskaras that make an impression on us when we have what we call in English rites of passage, our wedding, our first day at school, our graduation. These things are supposed to move us up and make us feel that we've accomplished something and we're heading towards good goals. Our initiation, first initiation, second initiation. These are sangskaras which remind us that we've made a connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his devotee, and we have obligations to keep in order to keep those connections strong, and we're going to make decisions that don't break those vows that we took when we took those, we made those vows, those sangskaras. So those sangskaras keep us strong and they help us, or we can have sangskaras which make us weak, right? How many of you had the experience that some music that you heard when you were young, right? You go into a store and they're playing it in the back, and all of a sudden you remember all the words, even though the last time you heard it was some 50 years ago. That's a sangskar. It's an impression in your head. That commercial for Dial soap, don't you wish everybody did? I use Dial, don't you wish everybody did? So all these different impressions on our mind, and what are we putting in our mind now? What impressions are we putting in our mind? Are we impressed? Are we thinking that the most impressive thing is that new car that I saw? I really want that car. That car, I dream about that car at night. It's stuck in my head, that car. And so I'm, they have this thing called success, where you're supposed to meditate on what you want all the time. Well, we should meditate on what we want all the time. What do we want? If we want Krishna, then we should meditate on Krishna all the time and his service all the time. And if we don't, if we want something else and we put that in our head and that's our samskara and that's inspiring our desire, then we'll go to that place. We'll find that thing driving us, that desire pulling us and generating our activity. So these, I encourage all of us. Yesterday we heard about the need for developing wonderful communities and opportunities to live in a very unfettered situation, a situation unfettered by terrible material drives. But and that is certainly a necessary thing, and we need to do that. And in order to do that, we have to work on ourselves, because we're the component parts of that community. Without us having freedom from material desire, freedom from material entanglement, we will not be able to create communities which are free from material desire. Because we won't be able to go there thinking, well, how am I going to go there if I can't get on the internet? And how am I going to go there if my phone doesn't work, if there's no reception? And how am I going to go there if I don't have a comfortable kashipu and I don't have, you know, all the things I need to be healthy, wealthy, and wise? So we can think globally and start acting locally by adjusting the knobs on our mixer and trying to keep the inspiration for our desire focusing on our connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that way we can decide whether we want to have the connection of Jarasandha or we want to have the connection of Queen Rukmini. And I'll stop there. If there's any question, I can try to answer. I have a dentist appointment, so I have to go. Yes. Karapoya. of material sense perception.
The soul and the subtle body fall within that range, and despite what you do, it's almost impossible to see that range. But of course, they are, or they've been, qualified people in the past and even now.
That, well, I'm glad you used the word almost.
Have been qualified to see. So, right. So when we were speaking of a spirit, that was the range we were talking about.
Mm.
The other point I want to make, like, you know, you were saying about keeping all these obstacles out of the way, which is definitely true. But also I think this is where, like, Varnashram helps a little, because for a younger person, say a younger lady, a younger woman, her needs and everything is completely different from an old, you know, say advanced person like you, you know, in your stage. And so,
you can say old, I can handle it.
So in a Varnashram society, then she's able to act in her capacity, in her stage of life.
Mm.
And you are also able to do the same thing, you know, all serving Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes when you try to equate your position with that young person's position,
I don't understand your point.
In other words, you know, she might and so many different things.
Which means,
you know, you need phone and you need car. And
do you? I mean, I'm not saying I don't. I need a phone, I need a computer, I don't travel anywhere without either one of them. But what I'm saying is that these needs are artificial. I mean, we need them because our society, just calling upon the Amish for a minute, that the Amish people, I've had association with the Amish people for many, 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 many years because I used to live in Devanagari in the 70s, and, you know, it's a very Amish area. And those people, they try to keep material, these kind of things, out of their life. You know, electricity and buttons even, and, you know, cars, they don't drive cars, they try to keep... But they've had a working situation where they make furniture and different products from the farm that keep them supported, their community supported, and for years and years, forever, they've had these markets for these things, and that's how they've supported their community. But now they're finding that in order to survive, they have to have computers, they have to have phones. So what they've done is that they've designated a certain number of people who are allowed to use these things, and the other people aren't allowed to use them. But in order to interface, in order to market anything, sell anything, these things are required. The question isn't whether, you know, we should have them or not. The question is, what should we allow them to do to us, and keeping them under control rather than having them control us. Because it's the good, the bad, and the ugly. You know, these things come into our lives, and we can they can help us or they can hinder us. I see, when I was in Vrindavan, I was teaching Bhagavad Gita, and one thing, every morning at 2:30 or 3 o'clock, I would go out and circumnavigate the temple. And so you see, the men, they have pockets, you know, in their kurtas. It was quite warm. So they were in kurtas, and in their pockets, you can see these glowing iPhones. And so from a distance, you see these people, and they have these glowing pockets. And, you know, the glowing pocket, when it flickers, it means the iPhone's ringing, because they don't have it on ring, but it's vibrating or whatever, and the light, and immediately, so Japa with one hand, iPhone in the other, 2:30 in the morning. So do we want to do that? You know, is there something wrong with leaving your phone home for Mangalarti? Will the world come to an end between 2:30 and 5:30? I mean, you know, there are decisions that we can make that will minimize the impact, which will allow us to function within the modes of goodness or ignorance, depending on what we want to do. And that was the point I was making. And if it came across wrongly, then I'm sorry. But, you know, we do have things. The society makes us have, just like here. We have 120 saving acres or so. We could make housing that would be so nice for so many devotees to live here. But because of the government, we're not allowed to have more than, you know, what, 7 or 8 or 10 places of residence here. And every residence has to be a residence with air conditioning and heating, and, you know, it has to be a certain amount of square feet, and it has to have a certain amount of, you know, weight load and hurricane wind resistance, and on it goes and goes and gets complicated, and then you have to get a permit, and the permit takes weeks and thousands of dollars and yada, yada, yada. So we're forced by the situation where we live to do things differently than we would do them if we had our way. But then again, within that sphere, we have to find our place where we can be protected. Is that okay? Thank you. Yes, two more, and then I have to go because I have a dentist appointment. Yes.
Thank you very much, Mataji, for your class and reminders. I had a question, if you don't mind, about the story of Muchikunda.
Mm.
So he actually got to see Krishna face to face, but hearing your class, some doubts has entered my mind as to why Krishna didn't instruct him to go to the temple and worship his form in the temple, and that way he could constantly see him, or why didn't he say so many of the other activities that we perform? Why did he tell him, you're not pure enough, so you know, you got to go get purified for the rest of your life? It seems a little contradictory from what we've been discussing.
I don't know why Krishna told Muchikunda that, because I don't know what's in Muchikunda's heart. But I do know that in different ages, there's different ways of achieving Krishna, just like we heard about Narada in your class. So Narada didn't go to the temple. He had, you know, he had a different path to Krishna. Dhruva Maharaj didn't go to the temple either. He went to the forest. His mother said, find Krishna in the forest. So different levels of purification are necessary for us to really see Krishna. There may be obstacles, and they may go away very fast or more slowly, depending on how vigorously we try to remove those anarthas from our heart. And some paths take us slowly through the anartha nivritti process, and some processes take us through the anartha nivritti process very fast. Sometimes the fast road may be a little bit more painful. The slow road may appear to be less painful, although it takes a long time. So for individual living entities, there's different prescriptions. And generally, the spiritual master is the one who ascertains what those prescriptions are and advises the disciple how to move forward in the best way possible for them. So Krishna, acting as Muchikunda's guru, told him what to do based on what he knew was in his heart. And I don't know why he said that.
But also there is this principle that Krishna emphasized in the exchanges with Narada Muni, and I would assume it's also in Muchikunda, that he wanted him to develop a hankering, a desire.
Mm-hmm. And that's there with the gopis, that's there with many devotees.
Feeling that I cannot see you, and I want to see you.
Oh, yeah, so, but the desire is a form of seeing, actually. That intense separation is a form of seeing. Even though I'm not seeing, I'm seeing. It's said that the separation is better because when I'm feeling separation, I'm seeing Krishna everywhere. And when I'm with Krishna, I'm only seeing Krishna in front of me. So separation is actually higher than union because the mind and senses of the person feeling intense separation are completely absorbed in Krishna, so his vision of Krishna may not be, you know, like through the lenses of the glasses, but he is seeing Krishna everywhere. Sometimes you're seeing and sometimes you're not seeing him. Well, I see him and I feel separation from him because I don't see him. I mean, I see him, in one sense I see him, but the depth of my ability to see him is not at all where it could be. You know, I mean, I see him on one level because I dress him, what to speak of see him, I dress him, and in dressing him and in interacting with him, I have some inclination, some understanding that this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is more than you know, maybe some guy who comes in to fix the air conditioning has when he goes on the altar. But the level of being able to see them in the sense of Lord Chaitanya, when he went in and sees Lord Jagannath and falls on the floor, fainting immediately upon seeing Lord Jagannath because he saw Krishna there, you know, there's a big space. So there's a continuum. It's not like either or. And so I'm seeing, but I'm not seeing, and I'm developing my vision. My vision is coming gradually as I strip away layers of materialistic covering. Is that helpful? Okay. Short, because I have to go. Hare Krishna. Only by your mercy. Fourth chapter, yeah. From the Sada Sangha. One could say, I mean, a little speculative, but Muchakunda's association in his life that was going around before he was sent to Badrinath, his association wasn't the best for achieving that level of separation and that understanding. So get out of here and go somewhere else. Okay, I have to stop now. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.